Over the years, we've heard from a lot of authors here urging us to reevaluate some individual or some event or phenomenon. One writer argued for the centrality of the codfish in the course of modern history. Another insisted that birds possess intelligence comparable to humans. Well, perhaps in that company, Jack Weatherford is a modest reappraiser. He has written a book in praise of Genghis, that's right, it's Genghis, not Genghis, Genghis Khan, the 13th-century Mongol conqueror who has become synonymous with rampaging hordes, brute force, and an unquenchable thirst for plunder.
I'd say, aside from religious leaders, Genghis Khan is probably the most important person in world history. And that's a sweeping statement, and a lot of people won't agree with it. But when you look at the facts and you look at how much he accomplished in his lifetime, I certainly think it's true.
Jack Weatherford's book, Genghis Khan and the Making of the Modern World, draws on a Mongol document called The Secret History that came to light in the West only in recent decades. Using that and other sources, Weatherford writes of an empire that imposed no creed on its subjects and let all religions thrive, an empire that fostered free trade, an empire that was incomparably vast.
No one has created anything like it at all. It's about 11 or 12 million square miles, so it's much larger than all of North America would be today. It's certainly much larger than the Soviet Union, which is the next largest empire in world history ever reached. It stretched from Asia, of course, all the way across to the Mediterranean. It included all the great civilizations of the past, eventually including China, Russia, Mesopotamia, Persia, and even India. So the majority of people alive in the world today live in a country that was once conquered by the Mongols.
A lot of what you're writing about here is military tactics and also the organization of an army. And in both respects, Genghis Khan and the Mongols were innovators, very, very creative and devastatingly effective.
Yes, Genghis Khan had an army of approximately 100,000 people, and they were organized into units of 10. So a squad of 10, which would be organized into a company of 100, which would be organized into a battalion of 1,000, and then to an army of 10,000. So he had nine armies of 10,000 plus his own bodyguard of 10,000. This very small number was able to conquer huge empires. You look at the number of people in China at this time, for example, it was probably something like 120 million people. So they conquered that. They conquered Russia. They conquered Persia. They conquered all of these areas with this small but tightly organized army.
This was an army in which hardly anybody marched on foot.
No one did. It was 100% cavalry. Now, later they had allies who marched on foot, but the Mongols were 100% cavalry, and they were all armed. So it was the unification of cavalry and artillery, you might say, because they were all bowmen. Unlike the European armies, where the bowmen were separate from the riders and the cavalry were almost all aristocrats. In the Mongols, it was all united.
You mentioned aristocrats. One thing that Genghis Khan had contempt for was the aristocrat.
Yes, he came from the lowest rung of the lowest tribe in the steppes, and he fought his way up, and he realized that the aristocratic people were treacherous. They would always betray him, whereas the common people would be loyal to him. And so one of the reasons I think that he became noted as such a barbarian and a hugely cruel person was because when he conquered cities, he did kill the rich right away. The aristocrats had no function. They usually could not read or write. They had no medical skills. They could not teach. They were not a religious people. They couldn't weave or make pottery. And so in the mind of Genghis Khan, they were worthless and they were dangerous. And so he killed them off in every city that he conquered.
The source for much of this is this book, The Secret History, that had been written by his relative at the end of his life. And how seriously do we take this source? That is it believable history? Was Genghis Khan unusually old for somebody who lived on the steppes in the 13th century, say? Was his age perhaps magnified, or do all of these things check out with other sources?
The things that are known in other sources seem to check out. What's so interesting about the secret history is that there are so many other facts there that are not known from other sources. For example, almost all the facts that are known there and are not known generally are very insulting to the memory of Genghis Khan. It's not the sort of thing that the family would want to get out. One of the simple things is that he cried a lot as a child. He didn't know what to do, and he would cry. Another thing was that he was afraid of dogs as a child. The worst thing of all in there, of course, is that around the age of 12 or so, he killed his half-brother in a struggle for supremacy within his own family. So these are stories that no family wants to let out. And so that only, in my mind, adds to the authenticity of the secret history.
One could read the story of Genghis Khan and say, here is somebody who destroyed traditional order wherever he found it, created an empire that was mostly about exacting tribute from various civilizations that were more advanced than his own. And he organized people into these phalanxes of units of 10. And one can say we have here the core of the most fascistic totalitarian leadership one can imagine, and come up with a very negative review of this man. What am I getting wrong if I see him in that light?
He was not a totalitarian in any sense. It's true that he was taking tribute from the people, but he was also giving back to the people in the sense that he acquired no personal wealth. He lived a very simple life throughout his life, and he became obsessed with the idea of commerce as a way of connecting the people together and keeping them loyal in one system. He wanted to create a single law under which all people in the world would live, but a just law. In fact, it began with such things as diplomatic immunity. And he went from there to creating a law that today many nations would accept as the ideal, but in his time was in fact far from the ideal. That he lived in a time of great torture and of great torment of people. And he really was a revolutionary. It's not surprising that the first book in the English language, Geoffrey Chaucer, turned in the Canterbury Tales and wrote the longest story in there about Genghis Khan, and he called him the greatest lord that ever lived. It was quite clear in his time that he was a revolutionary. But since then, we've turned against him, and we have turned against, in a certain way, the whole history of Asia. But we've rejected him, and we've consigned him to the edge as a barbarian there, with, as you said, with Attila the Hun, and with other great evils of history. But in fact, he was one of the greatest men of history, and he still has a positive impact on the world today.
Jack Weatherford, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate it.
Jack Weatherford is the author of Genghis Khan and the Making of the Modern World.